What you listening to, son?
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to Talking of the Hill, where it's bathroom time all the time. I'm your host, faux-foo enjoyer Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Network's chronological exploration of King of the Hill, who is here with me today.
Henry Gilbert, and this is my own personal private business, Bob.
And today's episode is Hank's Unmentionable Problem.
He looks like an angel. A dead angel.
Today's episode aired on February 23rd, 1997. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
This is Hank Hill with the news.
Bobby, NBC airs Schindler's List uncensored and uncut in prime time for 65 million viewers, a real record of viewership back then. The special edition of Empire Strikes Back is number one at the theaters, and the people are smelling sex and candy as Marcy's Playground debut album hits record stores.
Are they Canadian? They feel Canadian to me.
The way they say sex and candy, it does feel that way. But that was an unmistakable song of 1997. I smell sex and
it's a very low-effort karaoke song, I'll give you that.
You see, I don't pick that one because it's one of those songs where it's like you don't remember any bit but the chorus. And so you're all just kind of left hanging during the other bits and just shrugging like, oh, these are the lyrics? Oh, I never knew.
It's about hanging around downtown by yourself. They're from San Diego.
Oh, okay.
And we have The Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Okay, that's the one I did see in theaters.
We're in special edition zone right now of Lucas history where, so not only do they get to practice film distribution again with Fox, they also get Lucasfilm or ILM back up and working to make new special effects again. It all is like an early workout to get back in shape for the marathon that will be the prequels.
This actually places me in time, I believe. No, 100% for sure. This was the first Star Wars movie I saw in its entirety. I saw Empire first in the movie theater.
Right.
And then immediately after, I was like, oh, I think I like Star Wars. I'll rent the first one. And I did. And then I still have never seen Return of the Jedi.
That is
got this weird mental block where I don't want to do it. I don't know why. It's fine.
It's a choice for sure.
Before I die.
But you've seen some of the modern Star Wars films, haven't
you?
Yeah,
I've seen The Force Gets Up Out of Bed again and The Last Jedi.
And Rogue One.
Rogue One. Yeah, I've seen them all. I didn't see Solo. You couldn't trick me with that. You saw Solo.
I did. Look, I see. It's my job. I have to have opinions on things.
They could call a Star Wars movie "All Me Fans Are Stupid Pigs," and everyone would go see it.
But what's interesting about Empire Strikes Back, the special edition, is how they changed almost nothing. It's the least touched of them, perhaps because Lucas didn't direct it, and so he didn't see as many of the flaws on screen, or he was terrified of Irvin Kershner because he was his old film teacher who he installed as director on that, or they realized it's the best Star Wars movie and needed no changes. But the only changes they really made to it were the ice creature on Hoth. They show a bit more of him because they really didn't have him ready in the original filming. He was just a shitty puppet. Now he was a full-bodied puppet. One of the few things that wasn't CG. And then they also added about 30 seconds of showing Darth Vader leave Cloud City to get in his spaceship.
Oh, thank
God. So he will look at Luke later. It's like, you always wondered, but how did he leave Cloud City to get back on the Executor spaceship? I don't understand.
So many unanswered questions.
And Schindler's List, I don't think, as I was not watching Empire Strikes Back, I didn't see Schindler's List until like a 2001 film class I took.
And the movie was like almost 5 years old at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
4 or 5 years old.
It was quite a event on TV to show that. And to like, I think it did teach a lot of people who probably didn't know about the Holocaust something by seeing it. So it's always good to inform people at the very least.
It'd be too controversial today, but
Probably. Yeah, they'd be like, are we making a statement by having Schindler's List on here? Might upset people.
This movie's got a real agenda, I
you,
think.
You know we're secretly Nazis, so you're putting on Schindler's List to upset us. How dare you?
But let's talk about a happier topic, yes. And that is pooping. And this episode's all about pooping because it's written by Mike Judge and Greg Daniels. And here's my theory. In the ads for the show, and of course the visuals of this show, it's like from the creator of Beavis and Butthead. And then this show comes on, it's nothing like Beavis and Butthead. This is sort of the Beavis and Butthead style episode where it's about a Beavis and Butthead topic, but it's filtered through the Greg Daniels lens. It's about pooping.
Yeah.
In fact, the episode of Beavis and Butthead we did for What a Cartoon was about constipation.
You're right, yes.
And it was a much funnier look at constipation.
And both end with the lead character finally using the bathroom.
Yes.
And yeah, you know what? That filter thing is a good way to put it. Like, the coffee grounds are Mike Judge.
Yeah.
And the filter is Greg Daniels, and the coffee that drips out of it, that is this episode. Because this, yeah, you have a very scatological, and it's funny to laugh about. Everybody poops. We're all laughing about poop. But it's through the lens of emotional human interactions and, like, the social contract of a marriage, too.
Yeah.
Just like, well, what is it? What is our relationship? How open am I? Are we the type of people who look at each other in the bathroom? What do we do?
And even though this episode is not gross, I don't think.
No.
It's handled very, I guess, classily. I think it's the first TV episode I've ever seen that's just about a character pooping.
Yeah, I think so.
From start to finish, it's all about bowel movements.
With no bodily noises, though.
Yeah.
No farts, no... yeah, I think yeah, they couldn't do this... They make it as clinical as possible, but, like, Simpsons couldn't be a whole episode about not shitting. And it also is such a low-stakes thing by comparison to, like, the wacky Simpsons episodes this was airing against, like... Mountain of Madness or Simpsons Califragilistic XBLE Annoyed Grunt-ish. So yeah, I said the whole thing there. I also, this one hit me a lot harder as an adult than it did as a kid. Because now...
Now you think about all the pooping you're doing.
Well, yes, I do think about, like, you know, I've been counting the days now of how often I do it and eating a lot more fiber. But also this, just the bit about, like, the marriage aspects of this and, you know, talking about your health with your partner and not wanting to, like, that really hit me hard because, you know, I'm married and it's, I am a private person like Hank and that I don't like talking about any health issues I may have. And I also have, like, a very, stubborn American male bullshit idea of, like, if I am sick, I'll just grit my teeth. That's what Clint Eastwood would do. He wouldn't go to a doctor, and I'm sure it'll pass. And if I go to a doctor, they'll just tell me something horrible. And so if I don't go to the doctor, then I'll never learn anything horrible, and I'll be fine. And my response to a partner who is, like, concerned that it could be something worse and I should go to the doctor, my response is always like, stop worrying. I don't die. I'm fine. Leave me alone.
My reaction is if there's something health-wise wrong with me, I feel like I've done something wrong. And so when I finally do go to the doctor, I'm like, this hurts. I'm really sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I don't know what it is. It's my fault, probably. And then I have to deal with that to actually, you know, overcome any sort of health issue I'm having.
Yeah. You definitely a lot of apologies to doctors come in when I finally do
it's like,
it.
Like, I'm wasting your time. I know. Here's $500.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I have that reaction too of, like, this is probably nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I also, like, mentally diagnose myself before going in there. So I just tell the doctor, well, it's probably this, right? And the doctor just, the worst thing that can happen is the rare times when the doctor tells me, like, oh no, you were right. And I was like, all right,
yeah.
I am Henry MD. I was correct.
I don't want to get too gross here, but, like, the first time you have to ask a doctor to look at your butthole,
yes,
or your genitals, you're like, number one, I'm not a pervert. There's something, yeah, really going on, and you need to check it out. But then you're like, I feel so bad.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to look in my butt.
I've never had to take down my pants in front of a doctor before, so let's just all just look at the wall and not think about where that cotton swab is going to go.
Cold, cold hands.
yeah, now I had that. I also had that with to bring this above the belt, I had that interaction with a doctor over... I was having some minor hearing loss, as you recall, Bob. And it was just like I had fluid trapped in my ears. And what was wonderful was going through a bunch of worries about what it could be, suffering through having nothing happen, and then going to my doctor, having the doctor confirm, yes, I can see you have hearing loss. I don't know. It's going to take time.
Yeah.
And it'll just pass. So like, because they don't, I guess technically they could have put tubes in my ears, but then it's, then that causes a whole bunch more problems. But that's what's also annoying. And what keeps me from going to the doctor like Hank does in this episode, which is just like, their answer, they don't have a magic wand. Their answer will probably be making things worse for the time being.
I mean, I was poor for a long time, and I also didn't have health insurance, so I'm not trained to go to the doctor. It's like, you're sick. I don't go to the doctor when I'm sick. Why would you? That's a waste of a trip, a waste of money. One time I did have the flu. I didn't have insurance, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do the responsible thing and go to the doctor and get some help. And then I go to the doctor, and he's like, yeah, you've got the flu, drink lots of fluids and go to sleep. And then, that'll be $200, please. Like, wow. What? Give me some pill.
At least, like, dress it up with some other words, and don't waste my time. Just a sugar pill. Like, where can we get these placebos? Give me that.
But the idea of someone, like, going to the doctor because they have a cold or flu, I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Do people used to do that?
That is against my, like, Protestant work ethic values of like you work through it because you're a man and you're tough. Like I know that's bullshit. I know that's all bullshit, but it's like deprogramming your brain. And that's what Hank also is struggling with in this episode. And in the marriage thing too, like the scenes where Peggy is just like begging him to do something or she's just, you know, so beside herself with worry. Those ones really got me because I do feel bad if I ever made my husband worry unnecessarily just because I want to say like, I'm fine. That those scenes really racked me with guilt.
Yeah. It's a different relationship I have now. Like before I just enjoyed the high class pooping jokes and now I'm more on board for the relationship stuff. But this episode starts off, we get a little hint of Peggy's boggle skills. She's doing some boggle training, it seems. And we get a bit more of Luann having struggles at beauty school. She passed the lather, but failed the rinse part, and then failed repeat. But that's not very fair, is it?
That's a good. The
shampooing final.
They had a collection of hairdressing jokes for Luann, and they kind of just parcel them out every now and then for her to have like one line. I don't think she says much else in this episode.
That's
actually
basically it. Yeah, I mean, it's a nice joke on the whole lather, rinse, repeat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just too much shampooing for one head.
Oh, and this episode too is one they like very few that has a commentary track on the DVDs.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, Greg Daniels is not a particularly informative commentary, and I don't think he cares much for him.
He needs, like, more people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mike Judge is not there, and that's just him, right?
Yeah, yeah. But it was cool to hear about how this was, like, the episode that made him truly fall in love with the series, where he could finally connect how, you know, it's a show about Texas, but he could connect it with his, you know, New York father and how kind of, like, these universal aspects of it, too. Yeah, I like that.
But this episode starts off with Hank having some real bathroom issues.
Hank, you forgot to flush.
Didn't have to. Didn't do anything.
Oh. I see. How long has this been going on?
There's nothing going on, Peg. That's the problem.
Well, how long have you had this problem?
There is no problem, please. This is not something we need to talk about.
Well, if you do have a problem, I could...
Peggy, please, for God's sakes. I'm getting a bite. Is there any chicken fried steak left?
So we get a hint as to why maybe Hank is having these problems.
I love how subtly this episode deals with his diet.
Yeah.
No one says out loud, you're eating too much beef and are completely clogged up with red meat. But that is what is being said in every choice he makes.
Yeah, there's never a discussion about that. I guess Peggy does change his diet, but they never underline it. Just like just seeing him live naturally, you understand like why he's having these issues. And what is chicken fried steak? You're from the South.
You've never had it?
Is that like breaded steak or deep fried steak?
Yeah,
or?
It's like country fried. It's also called country fried.
Okay.
I prefer chicken fried as a title because it mixes the names of two animals
together.
That's
why it confused me.
But yes, it's basically you take a hamburger steak and then bread it and fry it in the manner of a fried piece of chicken.
Sounds like it's really good for you. So, all the fat of red, like ground chuck,
well,
with all the breading and oil. Mm.
Well, Bob, what if I told you that traditionally it's served with gravy on top as well?
Well,
pork gravy to really white pork. White gravy is chicken, isn't it?
But yeah.
Yeah. It's though usually there's gravy on top as well.
Boy, that sounds decadent.
I Love it. My mouth is watering talking about chicken fried steak right now.
Are you safe from chicken fried steak in the Bay Area?
You know, if you go to like a Denny's type operation, you will. They do serve country fried steak or a non-branded diner like the diner that's in the Castro, Orphan Andes. You can get a nice chicken fried steak there or, you know, biscuits and gravy or, you know, none of the stuff you can eat.
Now, I will enjoy biscuits and gravy. I will say that.
With
that is
vegetarian
good.
Gravy.
Yeah, mushroom gravy, baby.
How can that gravy even taste good without an animal suffering?
And some fofu bacon. We'll get to fofu.
But yes, that is exactly what Hank says there. Please, let's not talk about it. I'm fine. That is my go-to saying when it's time to talk about my health.
So later in the episode, in the next scene rather, Hank emerges angrily from the bathroom again. And then we cut back to later that night, and Pecky is offering him a Megamucil, 10 heaping spoonfuls in a glass of water every night to stay regular. Yeah, that seems like a lot of grit in your system.
Yes, right? But though, I mean, you're definitely supposed to have a lot of fiber. Most people don't get as much fiber as they need to. That's why my primary snackage, I try not to snack on other things now, is fiber bars. Or at least, like, look, I'm eating a cookie, I'm eating a brownie, but they're full. They've got 5 grams of fiber in them, so they're making things move. At least
I think everything is just so processed now that your body doesn't have to do much work to get, you know, it out of your system. So
yeah,
there's not a lot of fiber in most foods.
I remember that on the Doughboys, they had a funny bit. They went their Taco Bell episode with Gillian Jacobs. They had her on, and she had never had Taco Bell before. That's why they had her on for it.
Wow.
And they then, in the middle of the episode, tell her, like, well, some people don't go to Taco Bell because they think it gives them diarrhea. And she's like, what? You had me eat Taco Bell and you told me that? But he clarified, like, well, that it is because probably most Americans don't eat that many beans until they have it in Taco Bell. And so
I never
your
thought
stomach
of it that
doesn't
way.
Know what to do with all that extra fiber.
Yeah, whenever I heard those Taco Bell stories, I'm like, I eat Taco Bell just fine. It isn't like a shoot out of me like 3 hours later. But no, you're totally right. That could be like you're mainlining fiber for the first time in weeks.
Well, as I have had this situation. Boy, it's hard not to get too scatological.
We're
going to
be talking
episode.
A lot about our own pooping.
Yes,
habits,
yeah.
I guess.
But okay. But yeah, when you go from 0 to 60 in speeds of fiber, your intestines don't know what to do at first. And they've got a lot to say, your intestines do when you do that.
I usually, so I've been over the past year, like losing weight and eating healthier. And my lunch is usually a giant salad. So I normally try to get all my fiber in then. This is very interesting, by the way. but recently I had like a mega salad at this like super good salad place in Berkeley. And it was like made with kale. And I ate this giant like pound of salad and I went home and I was working on stuff and my stomach sounded like a rock tumbler. I was like, what is it doing in there? It's really tearing stuff up inside. But I guess it worked out for me in the end.
I also like when she's talking about the Megamucil, which it's weird. They said other brands in other episodes, but they change it to Mega instead of Meta.
It's the Megalomart value brand.
Oh,
yeah.
I get it.
It's the generic brand.
Okay, damn. Yeah. All right. It's way funnier now. Then when she's explaining that, Hank's like, please, I don't want to know this about you. Like, I think they've been together for close to 20 years, and he's never known anything about her bathroom uses. I mean, that's a level of intimacy not many couples have of like, for my husband, I'm like, hey, you deal with your bathroom stuff, and I'll deal with mine, and we'll just trust each other.
I've been dating my current girlfriend for a while now, and only recently have I been okay with, like, number two in the same area.
Wow.
Like, usually I'd be like, oh, I'm at a restaurant, let's do it here. but now it's just like, don't go in there. You have to go to the bathroom, you go first, and I'll go after you.
You go first, I'll just sit here.
It's understood that we don't talk about it in detail, but it's just like, I'm not ready for that yet.
I mean, a lot of relationships aren't, like, they don't need to be, like, yeah, I think. And that's definitely not what Hank wants either.
So this next scene is in the morning. Bobby gets eggs and sausage, and Hank gets a bran muffin. And then this next clip has a line of dialogue I use all the time.
You should eat those, Dad. They help you make.
Excuse me?
Huh?
What are you implying?
Well, I thought you were constipated.
Where would you get such an idea? That's ridiculous. Anyway, that's not something you should ever know about your father.
Well, it's pretty obvious. You were in the bathroom for an hour last night.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, Dad.
Give me that.
It's funny when Bobby has the advantage in a scene.
Yeah, I do. He's,
okay, Dad.
He's actually smarter than Hank for a change. Like, all right, if you say so.
But I use the phrase, they help you make, a lot when I'm offering somebody like healthy food. Like, it helps you make.
Where I grew up, nobody used make as a term for pooping. I never heard that. It was pretty rare to even hear somebody say, like, oh, you got a BM or whatever. Never heard that either. It was pretty much just like poop and dirtier than that.
We have 70 words for pooping, but only one word for friend. That's the next episode.
the brand muffins too, though. Okay, so the final breakthrough is that Hank realizes emotionally he needs to get better.
Yeah.
But also, like, eat a bran muffin, Hank. Like, change your diet in some way.
They're still good. I mean, a muffin's a muffin. It's still unhealthy. Just there's some bran in there.
Yeah. I mean, you should just take... There are also, like, probiotic fiber tablets. If you really don't want to eat anything with fiber in it or change your diet in any way, you can at least, like, have fiber tablets or whatever.
Yeah, I think the breakthrough is when Hank just comes to the terms with there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can't change this.
But in this case, like, he won't admit it's wrong. Also, there's a lot of multiple scenes in this could also play the same if it was that Hank is having erectile problems.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which, in either way, it's a question of his manhood, of like, well, a man can poop when he wants to, and your inability to is your failure as a man. So they work the same as if they were talking to Hank about if he couldn't get it up. It works the same, but this lets it be about bowel movements.
Yeah, I mean, the show does not go into this, but men are often very proud of their bowel movements.
Yes.
And the size of them, often.
It's especially a very, like, jocular thing to do. Me and Bob are big wusses, so I never had to look at a friend. Definitely I had teen friends who bragged about the size of their poos or weighing themselves before and after. One friend did that. They really did.
It was in the name of science.
And then, I think later he feeds the bran to Lady Bird. So I think that's why in the next scene she's keeping to having go out over and over again.
You're right. I never connected the two. She does feed the he does feed the muffin to Lady Bird. In the next scene, she has to go out again, and he gets resentful, like, show off.
Which, again, maybe you should have eaten those bran muffins then, Hank. Come
on. Working on Lady Bird. And we get our first scene with Nancy, who is surprisingly not even in the... I mean, she's in the earlier episodes.
You'll see her with... you'll see her with John Redcorn, but she does not speak.
John Redcorn gets a lot more speaking roles before Nancy does, and their relationship is very important. But basically, Peggy is having a heart-to-heart with her. She says, I'm a meteorologist, not a doctor. But if I had to make an educated guess, I'd say he's got polio. And then Peggy goes, oh my God. She's like, I'm not a meteorologist. I'm a weather girl.
That's the introduction of her job.
Yeah,
like, from the first time they had her speak, they knew what her job was. Like, I like that a lot too. I guess they really only needed it for this episode, so they'd have a reason for her to be on TV later to further humiliate Hank.
Yeah.
But it's a great guy.
That's right. Yeah. I like how she's basically a non-educated authority. Like, she knows how to point at a blue screen. And that's basically it.
Yeah, that's right. But that gives her, like, more authority than Peggy, which they use for some really great episodes in the future where Peggy's inferiority to Nancy really comes out. Like, Arlinians.
What was the other one? Arlinites. Yeah.
Arlinites, yeah.
Arlinites versus Arlinians.
I'm kind of, you know, I like Arlinians. I think it sounds better coming off the tongue.
It's not as harsh as Arlinite.
And, also, Peggy is such... She should know by now that Nancy is a blabbermouth and not tell her facts like this, but I think it's because Peggy literally has no other friends. Until Min arrives, she has no one else to talk to.
She has those nameless, like, housewives you rarely see again.
Well, sound like her.
Yeah, that is true. Actually, there is that same one as in the next episode, but everyone is giving advice to Hank, including Bill. And I like Hank saying, maybe you're all just going too much.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
He's using his time wisely.
Yeah, that gives me more hours of the day. And I did look, I don't know if you looked up WebMD stuff about constipation. I did.
I did not.
So 4 days is a long time to go without pooping, but WebMD says it's really 5 days when it's like officially categorized constipation.
God, where does all that food go that you're putting in your body?
It's just all packed
in your colon.
I mean, I think in this episode, I don't know if it's him being off model, but Hank does look fatter than usual.
Yeah. Maybe you're just like looking at his gut more because you're thinking about how constipated he is.
How none of that meat's moving.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I guess it's just all hanging out there. Though then again, that well, we'll get to it when he goes to the doctor. But yeah, according to WebMD, it's 5 days when it when it's officially constipation. They suggest, look, I'm not a doctor, don't go by what I say, but WebMD says you should wait. If it's 2 weeks without a movement,
oh my God,
that's when you go to the doctor.
Yeah, get it surgically removed, whatever's happening in there. So everyone is giving Hank some advice.
Have you tried squatting? It takes pressure off the lower body.
You know, Hank, I find a ride on the lawnmower helps.
Would you please stop talking about this?
Hey, Hank, you know, I've been thinking about y'all and y'all dang old bottom and all what's going to get moving again. I think y'all ought to go jogging and swimming in a water bunch, man. It's going to be bad having you pooping just like you used to, man. I know it's going to work.
It helped my aunt after her pregnancy.
I don't know you, do I?
No, you don't.
Would you all please leave me be? This is no one's business but my own.
Okay, but I've got one that's guaranteed to work for you, Hank. You take a spoonful of bacon grease.
I'm not eating bacon grease.
You didn't let me finish.
I love it.
God, that's...
You know where that's going. You know where the bacon grease is going.
You know right where that's going. Yeah.
I don't know if people still do enemas for constipation or
Enemas are where it's at. Yeah,
they're where it's at.
Now, the...
It sounds like you've been brainwashed by the Enema Council.
I do love that. That's almost like a Mel Brooks routine, like, you didn't let me finish.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a great... I love the sureness. The woman says, like, no, you don't. And, you know, Boomhauer, WebMD agrees with him that exercise is suggested.
Yeah.
It gets all the body moving, making things go again. Like, the activity can loosen things up.
It makes a smoothie in your tum-tum.
And also, Dale's thing about squatting, you know, I would bet Dale would be an early adopter of the squatty potty.
I've been thinking about that.
There, you know, I've never owned one, but when I first started dating my current husband, that's right.
you're temporary. Husband.
Yes, when I first started dating my husband.
Your first husband.
Where he was staying, they did own a squatty potty. And I will admit, like, it is effective. Like, it wasn't so effective that I felt like I needed it after, but it is, there's a reason that animals bend down like that to go instead of like having their legs straight.
Yeah, but I think we were talking about this earlier about like the dignity of the toilet. It's like, it's just a chair. It's just a chair
sitting on a chair and everything's normal.
Let's not talk about it. Oh boy, the comments for this episode are going to be disgusting.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. So there's like a weird early runner in this first season of C. Everett Koop. They were in love with C. Everett Koop, former Surgeon General C. Everett Koop. It's just a funny name, and he's a funny-looking guy.
Yeah. And also, I think Peggy thought that Hank would listen because he was Surgeon General to Reagan, where it's like, you know, he worked with Reagan.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's got the Reagan seal of approval. Isn't that good?
And Hank thinks he's Howard Stern.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because he's talking about the cecum.
Cecum. I mean, that's them getting away with something on TV there,
yeah. Hey, it's a real thing. And
I forgot Jim Cummings was on the show more than I thought.
Yeah.
He's C. Everett Koop.
He plays the New Yorker later. In the season,
he's all and he's also Pops and Topsy.
Oh yeah,
he's credited as Topsy. Now the Topsy says a lot of stuff, but I had forgotten Jim Cummings really. The show used more of voice acting talent, the standard voice acting talent roster, than I thought they did, including another appearance in this episode too.
So as Hank is turning the channel away from C. Everett Koop, Nancy is on the air, and this is really crossing the line here. Nancy wishes Hank well with his chronic constipation, and that's when Hank just kicks the cords out of the wall.
I love that. There could be nothing more humiliating for him than that.
And because of that, everybody knows. Like, the entire town knows about Hank's pooping issues.
I think this episode is the first of a many recurring theme in the show, which is, an embarrassing thing happens to Hank, and him fighting against embarrassment. His episode with no ass, his episode with the porno tape. It's Hank's dignity versus the world,
and how much he can be humiliated.
Yes, yeah, because it's fun. His as much as you feel bad for him, his reactions to this humiliating event are always funny. It's fun. I feel bad for him, but I also feel like Nancy, how dumb can she be to think that that's only helping him instead? Like, how much is she intentionally humiliating Hank, like, with this news?
Don't do it, number one. Maybe don't use his full name and the actual medical issue.
Yes, yeah. It actually seems almost illegal to reveal someone's medical problems on the air like that.
She has no scruples, all these weather ladies. So after Hank kicks the cords out of the wall, he's finally happy that Peggy will sit there silently with her worries.
I love that line.
He's like, finally.
I love an exchange where Peggy says something passive aggressive and he's just like, good, all right, great.
I choose to take that literally. So the next scene is we're back at Luli's and Hank orders many different kinds of steak. I didn't know there were this many kinds of steak and a burger.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I vary up my meats at a cafeteria, but I'm a fan of brisket. That's actually, you know, brisket is an underrated meat, Bob. It's tougher beef.
What is it?
Well, it's an old man meat.
That's what I thought.
That's why Tom Goes to the Mayor actually had a lot of brisket.
Oh, yeah. Pipes and briskets together at last.
But yeah, it's a type of beef that's harder to cook. It's more about like smoking or slow roasting. But boy, it comes out great. In Texas, my dad... My dad judged me for many things, and he thought I cut my steak wrong.
There's a right way.
Oh yes, yeah. A man doesn't cut a bunch of steak at once and then eat pieces at a time. You cut a piece, you eat it. You cut a piece, you eat it. It sounds like a fun guy to grow up with. Right? and he told me too that like I was eating the wrong barbecue. Pork is the best barbecued meat, followed by chicken. Beef doesn't barbecue well. It's more, my dad grew up in Arkansas, it's more of a Texas thing to barbecue steak.
That's shameful.
He prefers Arkansas style.
I would like the science to back this up. Like, what are your sources, Dad?
Well, if you question him on that, then you're just going to get a long lecture about how he's older than you and knows more.
So. I've been around the barbecue block a few times. Yes, so when asked to order a veggie, Hank gets macaroni and cheese. So, terrible diet, Hank has.
Who would not eat vegetables?
Kind of freak. Vegetables are good.
I should probably eat more vegetables.
You can dress them up with all kinds of fun things.
I guess, yeah. Slather them in all kinds of sauce. Barely even taste the vegetables. If we're talking about Henry's mental hangups with his dad, vegetables also are key to it. So,
oh, no.
But let's not be too depressing here. I do like, though, that Hank's trying to meet her halfway of eating a starch, which also that's not going to help your bowels move
anymore.
Packing
more material in there. Nothing's going to be shooting through there. So Hank gets some special dessert.
Ooh, chocolate sauce. Can I have some?
No, Bobby. Mm-hmm. This isn't ordinary chocolate. It is a laxative for your father.
Oh.
Where'd you find this chocolate sauce, Peg? It sure is good. Here, Bobby, try some.
Okay, I thought you'd never ask.
Bobby, you know what that is.
So?
What is it?
Laxative.
You're trying to drug me? Good God, that's going too far.
Well, you won't talk to me about it. Now, what if it really is something serious, like polyps or worse? You should see a doctor.
Stop making such a big deal out of it. I just can't go to the bathroom.
I mean, honestly, Hank should just eat the laxative ice cream, but that would be admitting there's a problem, and he can't do that.
That's exactly right. Yeah, at this point, a normal human, I feel like, would...
just take X-lax or whatever.
Yeah, just take it. Like, get things moving. If you got to do that, you do that. But him, even putting medicine to his mouth is admitting that something is wrong with him, and he is just so deep in denial that he can't do that. And
I mean, it's really observational. Like, I've known weirdo guys are like, I never get sick, I never take any medicine. It's like, wow, you're a big man, aren't you?
Yeah,
like,
a big strong man.
If you took an Advil, you would turn gay and your penis would fall off.
you would be weaker than me. So yes, it's true. I mean that's how specifically American like cowboy bullshit fucks with your head as a white guy. It's like
when I have a headache, I take a Tylenol and it goes away.
Oh, pussy. No, yeah, I also love how Bobby goes like, oh, he doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
But that's why Peggy doesn't keep She should have realized Bobby doesn't know what it is, but she trusted him to keep it a secret when he doesn't know.
He just wants the ice cream.
And his happiness at eating that ice cream. Like, he, like, that's such a great gag that you know that he's going to have some bathroom troubles, but he's just happy. Like, yep, I'm. And he has a bowl of ice cream in front of him already. It just doesn't have chocolate sauce on it.
That's a giant bowl of ice cream for Hank, too. It's, yes, like a, yeah. It's like a salad bowl.
And yeah, his again, I've said that before too. Stop making such a big deal out of it. It's nothing.
So at this point, Peggy has a nightmare. We get a nice little, so it's about Hank's death. And there, before we even see Cotton, there's a lot of jokes about Cotton, and he's one of the pallbearers. He's sort of just hanging off the coffin because he's much shorter than all the other men's because his shins were blown off in the war.
Yeah, them Nazis took my shins. Yeah, I like the the dream is entirely funny. It's a great. It gives you real insight into Peggy's thoughts and how, you know, stress dreams like this, I think we've all had, and especially the bit with algebra at the end, like you can see that it mixes in, your brain is doing a shuffle of all of your anxieties at once and throwing them at you.
Yeah, I'm surprised there was no nudity in this dream. Like, everyone was suddenly naked.
That's too risque for old Peggy. Yeah. She'd maybe their underwear.
But the school dreams never end, I swear to God. Like, no. Once every 2 months, I will have a dream like, oh no, I enrolled in this class at college. I never went to it in the finals today. And then it's just panic until I wake up and go like, oh, okay, that was fake. My brain made that up to torture me.
I you know, it's a mix of things. Like, sometimes I'm in an old classroom and I am late on something. Sometimes I'm in an old office and I haven't done my work. My least favorite stress dreams are where I dream that an old cat of mine is sick.
Oh, no.
And then I wake up and the realization is not I don't work there anymore. It's that, well, that cat's dead. So it's not sick anymore. They died 5 years ago, which that's even more fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think just having constant deadlines for our job that we do now is what keeps the stress dreams from coming, because something is always due. Yeah. And my brain is always thinking about it, like, don't relax. This is due. This is coming up.
I mean, you know, in our old jobs, there were never-ending deadlines too. But now those never-ending deadlines are just for us.
Yeah.
And nice coloring on Hank's funereal makeup.
I like
too.
The final indignity as Hank is given the, like, horrible corpse makeup before he dies. So we got the Bill line, the dead angel. Really good. Like, I laughed out loud watching this for review. Just like, oh, that's such a good line. A dead angel.
And Stephen Root's saying of it, yeah, too. Like, his a great line said well.
I also like Dale's, like, it should have been Bill.
I like in Peggy, this is Peggy's mind thinking this too, but she's casting the characters correctly. Like, she knows how all of them would react.
Dale, I mean, Dale hates Bill. They explore that later in the show, but Dale really hates Bill a lot.
And a nice Boomhauer crying. I like that too. And a very great animation effect on the flushing of Hank's coffin.
Cotton flushes Hank down to hell, which is funny because much later in the series, Hank would flush his ashes down this special toilet in this bar that Cotton drank at with his war buddies.
I forgot that. That's funny.
I mean, they didn't know that then. Yes. But,
but Peggy is correct in imagining that he would wish his son to go to hell. Like, that is what Cotton would do.
So Peggy awakes from her dreams and is relieved to see Hank alive on the toilet in more discomfort.
Oh!
Occupied!
Oh, Hank, you're alive.
Close the damn door. Can't you see I'm in here, Peg? Don't touch me. I'm on the John. Get out of here.
Well, Hank, I was so scared. I dreamed you died. You didn't see a doctor. You didn't listen to Coop.
Peggy, you're not supposed to see this.
Listen, honey. I love you. Please don't die on me.
I love you too, but, oh, geez. All right, I'll see a doctor if you just get out and leave me be.
You will? Oh, Hank. Oh, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, well, come on. Get a move on.
Oh, thank you.
Get!
Throw some TP at the door.
Yeah, again, I have never been touched by a partner on the toilet. I think I would have a similar reaction to Hank. Like, no, please. I
don't want you to know I go to the bathroom.
Yes, yeah, I know. Look,
I go to the small room every couple of hours. You don't know what happens in there.
It's so weird, too. Just like, look, we have seen each other naked, but that's not the toilet, okay? I'm sorry. And the nice extra gag, I don't know, something about her crying on the toilet, it really did get me. Like, Kathy and Jimmy is really good at playing Peggy as, like, they still get in a joke there that she's like, you didn't listen to Coop, but her tears feel very real.
Especially at the end of the episode, like, they're very good at the specificity of these things they're dealing with. So, like, another show would do, a worse show would do, like, a heart thing. I mean, yeah. The Simpsons did that. Yeah. I don't think it's a worse show, but it's an easier one to go to, like, a heart thing, a cancer scare, a broken limb. They zero in on constipation, so it's kind of a ridiculous thing, but they're taking it very seriously. So you're laughing at it, but it's also the emotion is real.
Yeah. Well, because constipation can lead to more serious things. It's not it's not just a bunch of red, it not always is a bunch of red meat blocking you up, you know?
I mean, they're very good at putting a twist on, like, a tropey thing. Like, Cotton, instead of having, like, missing an arm or a leg, he's missing his shins. Peggy, instead of feeling insecure about her body, she feels insecure about her feet. It's all, like, very different twists on things you would expect to see in a sitcom like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, in fiction, period.
It's so clever. Greg Daniels and Mike Judge, they're just awesome at this. Like, world character, I think they found, too, that there's more... Simpsons and other shows, but it's impossible not to compare them to The Simpsons. They were doing less emotional, grounded, character-based things. So by digging into their characters, they were finding something that wasn't being done on their co-branded show, the show that aired right before them.
So they go to the doctor, an old person's doctor, we later find out. And I like Bobby playing the model of the colon. And Peggy says, you don't know where it's been.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and the end he is blowing on, I think, is the anus.
It is,
also.
Yeah.
So
he's getting a pretty good noise out of that colon.
And this really took me back to a doctor issue of mine, which is above the belt, guys.
Yeah.
But I have sleep apnea, and it was something I'm more comfortable with it now, but I did feel Hank's shame about it because it is an old person problem, and I didn't ever want to even explore it until a well-known person in the games industry passed away from sleep apnea, so it made me want to get it checked out a few years ago, too. And when I did, the indignity I faced was similar to Hank's as well, of like, I'm in my 30s, I'm surrounded by people who are over 50, and then the worst part was that they do it in a group because, of course, Kaiser had to do this as fast as possible. Can't do this singly. So they do it in a group, and they give you all your results together, which you can just see on a piece of paper together.
It's like the doctor version of speed dating or something.
And I got to find out that I had the worst sleep apnea of anyone.
What the hell?
Like, they said severe, like severe twice. Which,
technically, you should be dead, sir.
Well, and what was awesome was that I get to feel bad. I get to feel like a freak who is sicker than these old people around me. And then I get to find out that it'll be a week before I can get the treatment stuff. So I get to wait, or no, I got to wait like 2 or 3 days of just thinking like, oh no, you have severe sleep apnea. You could die the next time you go to sleep,
Henry,
but we'll see you in 2 days.
They're trying to make money.
I know.
They're in the health business. Doesn't matter.
They just want to help people, don't they?
There's a good joke in here that is not sold very well through animation, but Hank is too ashamed to even finish writing constipation, so it's like the first half of the word and then a bunch of scribbles.
Yes.
So like people don't know what he has, and he has to like say it out loud.
There's that, and another underplayed joke is when he says he hurt his knee, that he limps very slightly after he leaves Mrs. McIntosh to walk to the desk. He limps just a little bit.
I didn't even realize that. I didn't see that. So he's like faking a knee injury get one over on his old teacher.
Yeah, but it's just for like 8 frames or something. It's, I think, you know, season one, a lot of lessons they learned is visual gags need a little more time or space or clarity. Like they had great ideas for these visual gags, but they didn't fully understand how to best express them.
With characters that stiff, you need more time for visual gags because they're not as apparent as a Simpsons visual gag would be. So we see the doctor, who is relieved that Hank does not have consumption. And we get some questions from him.
How long has it been since your last bowel movement?
Well, I usually don't keep track of that kind of thing, but...
5 days, and Hank's usual schedule is every 2 days. Of course, when we were first married, he'd go every day. But then I spoke to his mother, and she said the most interesting thing. She said when he was a teenager, he would be in that bathroom 3 or 4 times a day.
Peggy!
Please, Mr. Hill, this is helpful. Now, your wife is obviously concerned, and if she's concerned, I'm concerned. I think we'll do a sigmoidoscopy.
See, honey, aren't you glad we're here?
Hi, Mr. Hill. Why don't you go ahead and take off your pants for me, okay?
That's always something you don't want to hear.
Yes, yeah.
Just waiting. I mean, I have Hank's perspective. Like, I'm going to wait for the doctor to get here because often you'll be sitting there, like, almost naked, just waiting in silence, and you feel so vulnerable. Just like, I'm waiting for a door to open. I hope it's the right person.
Yeah, and it's like a mental game they're playing with you, too. I think make you more pliable with the doctor or something even. But yeah, I hate that, too. Just like, what? I can just take my pants off when the doctor arrives. What is that going to do? Waste 5 seconds of a doctor's time while they watch me take my pants off? They're about to see what's beneath my pants anyway. What do I care if they see me take them off? I think that's procedurally a mistake. Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Hank does have a point.
I love how Hank is so suffering, but Peggy's like, see, aren't you happy we came here? And yeah, this was where it really clicked for me that this was also could be about erectile dysfunction, because he's like, when we first got married, he'd go every day.
Oh, wow. You know what? I never read it like that. But yeah, I could totally see that.
And then also her naivete that she doesn't realize Hank was masturbating as a teenager all those times he went.
Oh, God. Yeah, to basically tell the doctor how much Hank was masturbating as a teen.
Yeah. Well, that the mom didn't realize either. I did like that. What I like about that is a character texture for Hank, that you know he's not a total freak, that he's like, no, he masturbated the normal teen boy amount as well.
He's still a human being, but he's just afraid to admit it. And he does, there's a nice little bit with him and Peggy where he's trying to just to find something to talk about. He's talking about the cotton balls in the room. And I do that in a doctor's office, too, when I'm just waiting, like, ooh, Q-tips. Those are long Q-tips. What does he do with those Q-tips?
My eyes usually go right to the...
like the posters?
The biohazard box. Yeah, I'm like, how many germs are in there? I wonder. If I were to eat one thing in there, would it kill me?
That's why there's a lock on the box, Henry.
These are the questions they'd ask me. I'm also very bad at taking blood. Like, I passed out the last time they did it.
Yeah.
And it's no fun.
Passed out?
Lost consciousness for like 2 seconds of like, oh, we gotta lay you down, and I was like, give me a juice box. That's
is it just the loss of blood, or is it like the psychological aspect?
It's more, I'd say it's 70 psychological, 30 the other. Because
giving away all your weaknesses, Henry. If you want to make Henry pass out, draw some blood.
Yes, yeah. Well, if you have the ability to make me bleed, then I think you've already exposed the weakness there. But
you've already won, sir.
But yeah, no, just the sight of blood leaving a hand really. Well, this one was really fun too, because they're like, okay, try to find a vein in your right arm. Can't find any around your elbow. Let's try left. Nope. All right. Got to do your hand. This was after they stabbed me about 3 times.
No. I don't mind. I'd rather not. I don't mind getting shots, but I don't like watching the tube fill up.
Yes.
I turn my head away. I won't go there. I could probably watch it and be uncomfortable, but I'd rather not look at it.
That's really, yeah. When I got my last flu shot, I don't look at it happening, but if I just turn away, it's like, blink, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, good. Just like a little sharp point.
Yeah, that's all it is. But anyway, yeah, poor Hank's indignities only begin here. This is where you do feel bad for Hank, that like, not just to not take it away from like gender and masculinity, but like as a person, he is losing all of his dignity and all of his independence right here. Like that's what he's giving up in this entire doctor scene, and why he is so despondent for the rest of the episode.
Another humiliation is a young medical student is asked to sit in, a young female medical student. And again, I have to side with Hank on this one because I have Kaiser Permanente too, the insurance.
What a wonderful place.
I was assigned a doctor. That's why I always laughed at the whole scare. I mean, Obamacare could be better. Universal healthcare is where it's at. But one of the freakouts was, I can't keep my doctor. And I was like, who has a doctor?
Yeah, who has your doctor?
My insurance changes like every year. It's like, I don't have the same doctor. I just happen to have the same doctor now because I went back on Kaiser, and it is a young woman. So now it's like, whenever I go in there, I'm like, I'm a pervert.
Oh, yeah, I don't like that. Yeah, you know, all those comedians had the joke about like, I visit my doctor, Dr. Vinnie Boombatsa. Like, how can you have the same doctor for that long to engender that joking familiarity?
That ended when doctors stopped taking things out of leather bags.
I feel like the last time I saw a comedian do doctor jokes, it was Louis C.K., and he really just used it to sneak in jokes about...
talk about his penis.
And there was a joke about forcing someone to suck a penis while they're unconscious.
But he was playing a character.
Yes, yeah. Well, it happened to him. And the doctor that did it was Stephen Root, a friend of the star of the show.
Oh, no.
And look, you don't want to go back to any... Going back to any Louis C.K. comedy is to be reminded that he was talking about all the things he did.
Or wanted to do.
And was pretending they were jokes. But anyway, the sigmoidoscopy.
That's real. Yeah.
It's a real thing. I was shocked to find out that they were always accurate on this. They were usually accurate on the show. And yeah, that it had to be like a pretty blonde girl who is going to be staring directly at his ass. And his wife has probably never put anything into his ass.
I don't think anything is going up there with Peggy and Hank.
Exit only on that butt. And so I would think this is the first time anything has been put in his butt, and that he has to do it in front of like his son, wife, doctor, and a young student. Like, it's couldn't be more humiliating.
Before Bobby comes in, though, there's a little gag of him hitting all the buttons in the elevator, and a pregnant woman is rushed in.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear a few dings, and then on the third ding, you hear the baby has been born.
Yes, yeah.
That does not really feel like a Bobby prank. It feels more like a Bart prank, which he did before.
Yeah, actually, that exact joke.
Bobby would do that on accident, like playing with the buttons, not like, haha, I'm going to mess with people. Like, Bobby is more innocent than that, I feel.
Yeah, there is a little too much sinister intentionality to this. This is in season one, Bobby intentionally tore off that stop sign. Like,
that's true. Yeah,
he's more of a bad boy in season one. I think he softens a bit. Maybe really when Connie comes to town is when he like starts to soften and be less of a bad boy.
I think so. She tamed Bobby Hill. But Bobby shows up and he gets to see the new camera.
Mr. Hill, this is a special camera that we use to get an inside view of your colon.
Just kill me now.
Mr. Hill, do you wish a bite plate?
Mom, I'm hungry. Whoa! Dad, what are they doing to you?
Bobby, get out of here!
No, Mr. Hill. When a family faces an illness, all members should be involved. Remember, they're your get-well team. Hey there, Ace. Do you like video games?
Yeah.
Well, this joystick is just like a video game joystick. Only my red button fires a real laser.
Cool. Pew, 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 pew.
Bobby.
Say, you're good. Maybe you could, help us out a little later. Just kidding, Mr. Hill. Mr. Hill, it doesn't hurt to smile. It might actually help. Tasha, you can begin.
Oh, God.
I like the perfect early Bobby line is, Mom, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
It's just like showing up to announce he's hungry.
Yeah, at a doctor's office, too. That's so great.
It's like, what are they doing to you?
Yeah, and that he is faced with his father's butt. He's never seen his dad's butt before, and here it is right in his face. They do animate his butt for the first time in the series.
Yeah, like I think the first shot of him before he gets a sigmoidoscopy is his butt through the gown.
Yes,
like the classic, you know, hospital gown joke that we've all seen.
And his butt's looking a lot healthier than it does in later appearances.
His diminished gluteal syndrome was not as severe in these early seasons.
That they're all just looking at his butt and seeing things up. Like, this is, I couldn't think of a more humiliating thing for Hank. He should be doing this alone. Like, don't bring your family here. And then, of course, he is faced with this touchy-feely doctor.
Yeah.
Just like making
they're
this
your get-well team.
All he wants is an old doctor who's like an army doctor who just treats him like an animal.
Won't talk.
Yeah. The emotionality of it is also what's driving him crazy. I love, too, these, like, the way Bobby waggles this butt camera in his face that's like, this has been up lots of people's butts, and it's like, hey Dad, look, just wiggling in his face.
I do like that the doctor thinks that Hank is Bobby's grandfather.
Yes, that's also amazing. That he thinks he should know Hank's age, and instead he guesses, he's like, well, you're 50, and so this is your grandson.
And the doctor does not have his science right by saying Hank's colon can stretch all the way around the world. It's not that long.
According to Google, it's 5 feet.
Yeah, I mean,
lower
as
intestine.
Watching this as a 15-year-old or whatever, I was like, that's wrong.
Yes, yeah, which that should really give you pause and get a second opinion. They should not be trusting him so much later if he thinks that it's that big. I do have like a science question here, though.
Sure.
They're going up his intestine that long, and for somebody who hasn't gone that long while eating, why aren't they seeing anything?
That's a good question.
I mean, okay, so look, I'm no proctologist, but I'm just saying, like, it seems that he has empty colons. It's not that when they say they see nothing, they definitely mean they don't see like polyps or growth or anything.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't seem that they see stool. Like they don't see anything in any of the shots of his colon.
Maybe they're looking for polyps or cancer or something like that, and not for like, well, there's poop in there because it's your colon.
Yeah. So maybe there were other shots that we didn't get to see as the audience, thankfully, that did see the waste material in there. Because otherwise, it just looks like it's an empty colon, which that should give them another question. They'd be like, how do you possibly have an empty colon, Mr. Hill? Like,
and another indignity he suffers is that Bobby wants to be a proctologist when he grows up. And that's when Hank clenches his butt cheeks.
I love that.
Woman has to tell him to unclench.
That's so great. He's, oh, God. Well, that's a great, and great sound design, too, on the camera not being able to move
as much
because he's clenching his buttocks.
So everyone takes a 5-minute break to stretch.
I love they
just have, stretching around Hank.
They have no care for how Hank is. They're like, man, we're all tensing up here. Anyway, let's all just like, we'll stretch while Hank has to be in the same position with a camera deep in his intestine.
Your colon is very boring, Hank. But then we find out the terrible news.
Well, Mr. Hill, we're not exactly sure what's causing your problem. So at this point, the best option might be to remove something surgically.
Oh.
I'm sorry, but apparently your low-fat, high-fiber diet is not working.
Well, maybe Hank just needs to give his low-fat, high-fiber diet a little more time. Isn't that right, Hank?
Yes, yes, all right.
Just to be safe, I'll book an operating room for the end of the week.
Oh, God.
Don't worry. You know, it's possible to live a long, healthy, slightly less active life without a colon.
Oh.
You just can't wear shorts.
No.
It's a good act break. So, Hank is going to get a colostomy bag. He's going to get his colon removed.
That's insane.
This doctor is going a little too far. I question the ethics behind this.
I feel like Mike Judge has a real distrust of doctors. I think that's
what's coming through in this episode for sure.
And but I mean, it's a comedy doctor, so he should be wrong about it. But he's presented as like, I don't know, a somewhat trustworthy doctor. But yeah, that he's like, for a man who has gone 5 days without pooping, with no, instead of like doing a doctor prescribed laxative of like, I am prescribing you laxative. He's like, we are cutting straight to surgery.
An expensive medical procedure. Yeah.
Yeah. That feels bad. Like, I don't think Hank should be getting a second opinion, especially the way Peggy says, maybe he should be giving that more of a try. I think is her saying like, I have technically been giving you more food, but you're not eating it. So again, the doctor should be like, well, okay, Hank, you're not eating this food. Come on. And I feel like Hank's only agreeing to the surgery just to end the conversation and get out of there.
Yeah, there'll be no more talk about it.
He's not even sitting down. When you are in a doctor's office,
that's true,
getting
a
thing, you should be sitting down and listening. He's like standing like, can we just go?
That's a very interesting touch. I didn't even notice. Wow.
A lot of body language. There's some great body language in here. Like I meant to mention it earlier when he takes his pants down. While he's talking about the cotton swabs, his legs also like fidget, like he's kind of stepping up and down, almost like a little kid who has to use the bathroom, but he doesn't have to use the bathroom.
That's the problem. So the third act opens at Soy to the World, and we're in the late 90s. A lot of mean-spirited jokes about vegetarians that I think are funny.
They are. But yeah, you as a vegetarian or pescatarian can co-sign on these jokes.
I will say that I was not a vegetarian in 1997, but the world of vegetarian foods has really expanded since the era of fofu.
Yes.
And there's a lot of great meat substitutes out there, but not so much in King of the Hill.
I've heard that from many vegetarians in my lives. And hey, look, I believe you, but I like meat.
You should try it. Just try it.
No, I'm fine, Bob.
You know how much sausage you can eat now? You can eat double the sausage. It's so good.
Mike Judge hates hippies. Like, he can't stand it. But I will say I'm actually kind of on this. This gag here and the moxibustion reminded me of a hippie I really hated who was this stereotype. Basically looked exactly the same. I worked with him at one of the websites. You didn't work with him. I worked with this guy.
A hippie at a website?
He was such a crunchy bullshit dude who just like, hey man, like he annoyed everybody. He just always talked. He thought every opinion he had was great. He was bad at his job. And he was like a crunchy hippie, though not a vegetarian. He actually said a dumb hippie thing of like, gotta eat blood to make blood, which is like,
that
no,
makes
that's,
sense. Yeah. That's how science works. I'm out of blood, frankly.
What was even funnier to find out was, so he was also a white guy, a Berkeley native white guy, whose wife was a moxibustionist, which I'm like, well, that's some nice cultural appropriation there. Very good. And then the final kicker, to find out he dressed himself up as like a lefty type person. And then he talks about, he just offhandedly says, well, and the people renting back in my backyard, he's like, wait, what? He's like, oh yeah, I mean, you know, I inherited this place from my parents, and they have a cottage in the back that we rent out to another family. And they, so I'm like, oh, so you're a fucking landlord who's a rich kid who inherited a house from your parents. Like, you're not even, you, when I find out a white hippie is rich, that just fills me, that confirms everything I hated about them. Like, I had a...
You're just like cosplaying as a hippie. You're not actually living the lifestyle.
Yes, yeah. It's a common people song all right there, except with extra stealing of valor from real poor people. Or also, at the very least, he wasn't a Rastafarian, at least that. I also, a cousin of mine, she's not into Rasta anymore, but she had a husband who then I find out is like, he's super rich. But he's like, no, if I just grow out my disgusting dreads, I can just pretend I'm not rich until the day I decide I am rich again, and then everything's fine.
I'll take that over Pastafarian, though.
But yeah, this, I also love the exchange of like, is this for your husband? Yes.
Although the guy says nothing at the store tastes good, but there's a poster behind him for a black bean burrito. That sounds pretty good.
That does sound nice. Yeah. If Hank even ate beans, they'd be refried beans. That's all he would
Or have. Like the kind of beans you just like out of a can you put ketchup on. The baked beans.
That's all he needs.
So Luann shows Hank the moxibustionist. It's really hard to say moxibustionist flyer. I mean, it's funny when she says it.
Yeah. It's a funnier word to make her say than, what's the other word for the...
Acupuncture.
Acupuncture.
Yeah.
Moxibustion is a funnier word than acupuncture. So.
It is. And Hank says, if anyone ever tried that on me, I kick his ass. So we actually see Hank kick his ass later, which is not fair to Dr. Lee.
Yeah, Dr. Lee is doing his job. Like, that's so great. His kid, he literally kicks him in the ass. And I can't speak to the usefulness of it or not. I have never had moxibustion, acupuncture, any of that stuff. I'm not against it, but I probably, if somebody told me to try that, I'd be like, I wouldn't say the things Hank thinks.
Yeah.
But I would probably have similar, like, you know, American gut reaction of like, that's different. No.
I'd be like, do you have any real medicine?
Yeah, can I have real medicine, please?
So there's a lot of little scenes of Hank living in pain. He's in the bathroom and he can't come out to play with Dale and Bill. We see Hank getting a spoonful of bacon grease for some purpose. We don't see what happens. I think he might have tried the Dale technique.
I think he did, which, and also, he is restricted from watching football. He's like, I want to watch football. No, it's your bathroom time. And I love the little detail that while he is an American man who loves football, the jovialness of dumping Gatorade is wrong.
Yeah. Hank is sort of like a fastidious nerd, though. I mean, he doesn't want someone covered in Gatorade.
He's just thinking about, like, if that happened to me, I'd hate that.
This actually reminds me, like, all of these scenes of Hank in the bathroom alone, it actually reminds me of a Beavis and Butthead episode where they have to get toilet paper for Mr. Anderson.
Oh.
And so they go to the grocery store and spend all of his money on themselves. And he's just sitting in the bathroom alone like, hello?
Oh, my God. I totally forgot that. It's coming from the same place, 100%. Like, the idea of this... proud, soft, middle-class man brought low by his physical needs.
He's a war hero, Tom Anderson. So, there's a lot of little scenes. Peggy lovingly draping like a towel over Hank as he's asleep on the toilet. And there's like a motivational poster in the bathroom. No goal is too high if we climb with confidence and care.
I love how Dale says, like, and he basically says, can he come out to play?
Yeah.
It's very funny.
And then I think we're at Luli's after this. So after Hank kicks Dr. Lee in the ass, I think we're at Luli's or some sort of buffet-style restaurant.
They're back to Luli's. Yeah. Which... everyone's eating barbecue. Man, my mouth is watering at seeing all that barbecue. Mm-mm. There's a few okay barbecue places in this area.
There's one in Berkeley right by where I live. You should try it.
Oh, yeah?
Like, it's super popular. Okay. It's like a real hole-in-the-wall thing, but it's always, like, swarmed with people.
I'll be by your place soon for
bird duties,
certainly. but I'll be there again, so maybe I'll give that a shot.
You really should. It looks really good. So Hank gets up to use the bathroom. Peggy escorts him. And yeah. The men's room, someone's in there, so Peggy lets him use the ladies' room. And I like more indignity for Hank. I mean, it's just a sort of, you know, gender-neutral bathroom for the most part, just like a single-use bathroom. I love the people that get freaked out over gender-neutral bathrooms. It's like, that's like almost any bathroom with just a toilet in a restaurant.
Yeah.
It's like, that's your bathroom in your house is a gender-neutral bathroom.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's obviously the bathroom warriors who are doing it out of, like, transphobia and their bigotry. But I think, too, there's just, like, the way our society is, the idea of someone of the opposite sex hearing you make toilet sounds feels incredibly humiliating, and you don't, it's different. Look, I don't love that, say, in an airport bathroom, men are hearing each other make noises. I don't feel comfortable. I think I would feel more uncomfortable if I knew a woman was hearing it too, but I think that's something for us all to get over, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, get over these. Like, I do, you know, the woman, the cowgirl and the tampons, those are the extra indignity for him, and that he's just so...
The camera just kind of zooms in on that. It's like, the camera is his point of view, and it's like, oh, there's a tampon dispenser. More like a world Hank doesn't want to know about.
And he just takes a sharp inhale of like, this is my life now. I'm eating salad. I'm going to the women's bathroom.
But I will say, I guess we could talk about bathroom etiquette. So Hank, like the men's in the women's room at this restaurant are just like, they have a toilet in them or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just for one person. And I like one person bathrooms when I'm out.
Yes.
Because you have privacy, and they're usually much cleaner than a giant bathroom with lots of stalls in them. But I walk in on so many people using those bathrooms because people don't think they have to lock the door.
Yeah.
Or often there will be a toilet and a urinal in a single-use bathroom. And I'll be using it. I've locked the door because there's a lock on it. And someone will like knock on it. It's like, no, this is a bathroom. If the door is locked, somebody is in here.
If it's locked, it's not that it's broken. The door is not broken and locked. It's that you can't come in. Give it a second. I mean, sometimes I fear I'm too selfish of my time in those single-use bathrooms. I always feel guilty if I open the door and someone's waiting there.
Yeah.
Which is what they want you to feel. I like being on the other side of that of like, oh boy, when they open this door, they're going to see my arms crossed and they're going to feel so guilty.
Be looking at my watch.
Oh boy. And I'll be like, and then I'll give them a nice passive-aggressive, thanks. Thanks a lot for freeing it up. But yeah, like, Peggy here, it's... I feel Peggy kind of sucks here, but she's not doing it intentionally. She's only doing this out of love for her husband and wanting him to not die.
Basically might die, and he has like a ticking clock now. There's 24 hours left before his colon is removed, and he's going to live it up in those last 24 hours. And there are lots of little montages here. Everyone's having fun outside, and Bobby's using a flashlight to look up a squirrel's butt. It's a nice joke about him wanting to be a proctologist.
Yes, that is great. I just read it as a weird thing a kid would do, but you are so right. It's him practicing proctology on a squirrel.
And we get a nice little scene with Peggy and Nancy talking about Hank's plight.
You know, Hank seems a little down.
Well, he's a shell of a man.
I never thought Hank would have the willpower to give up everything he enjoyed in life.
Well, that's not Hank. That's me. I mean, if it was up to him, he'd still be eating burgers in the backyard with Dale, Bill, and Boomhauer. He'd still be drinking beer and shouting at the TV set and having a lot of fun and... Wait here.
Yeah.
So what?
Well, I heard I wasn't listening, but I did hear a...
Oh, that was my glasses.
So I got to say, we didn't talk a lot about her. That's the first clip of Nancy we played on Talking of the Hill. That's Ashley Gardner.
Ah, yes.
She's an amazing voice actress. I don't know really what she's done before or since. She's not like a voice actor, but it's a great voice. If you want to hear more of her, we did a cartoon about King of the Hill called Peggy's Headache, and Nancy's in it a lot. And you can hear a lot more of the Nancy she would be with all the shugs and things that. I love Dale in a lights on kind of way.
yeah, man, she is great. Yeah. I underappreciate her as an actress, and I didn't realize she hadn't done all that much else.
But South African born.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that is surprising. I love her stance too, just like, oh, I didn't know he'd have the willpower to give up every single thing he loves. They can all tell how miserable he is. And yeah, that it finally hits Peggy that she has destroyed his life. And also that they even get a plop joke in the show, but it's about his glasses falling in the toilet. Have I ever glasses fall in the toilet? I don't think I have.
You're no Henry Kissinger.
You know, it is close to happen a few times because I had one pair of glasses that if I let my hair grow out too long, you need glasses that grip to the skin and not your hair because they slide too much on your hair. And I definitely had one pair that got a little too slidey if I didn't get a haircut. And I know at least once I did a mid-air catch of glasses before they land in the toilet.
I've never dropped a phone in the toilet, thank God.
Me neither. I
hear that horror story so much.
I risk it every day with how much toilet and phone combinations I do. But
it looks like Ashley Gardner gets a lot of work, but this is the one time she's just had a major role in a thing. She's usually a guest star, like on things like the Drew Carey Show and Charmed and ER and things like that.
Okay,
a character actress.
Yeah, one of those character actors who just like is a victim on CSI one week and then is a suspect on Law and Order the next week.
I'm actually surprised she's not Southern because, yeah, I know she's acting, but it's very convincing. She sounds like the Southern weather lady with chicken fried hair.
Yeah. And, a woman who is a Southerner but is media trained, so has softened some of her things and is like, no, I'm fancier than just your regular Southern person. And Peggy is so, when it finally hits her that how much she's messed up Hank's life by putting too much control over it. I mean, I think I don't like that they put too much guilt on her, but it is a tough thing in a partnership that you both, you know, you're separate people, but you also care about each other and it's about how much space you give each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough thing that you constantly have to like negotiate. And it's just so funny that they're talking about that through the lens of him being on the toilet.
I think to be fair to Peggy, none of this stuff is working. Mm-hmm. And they only have so much time left together with Hank that has a colon.
Yes. Yeah.
So this scene is very surprisingly touching.
I teared up, I gotta say.
Ends with him taking a giant shit. So I love I just love how they were able to switch from a very tearful exchange between a husband and wife to Hank taking a massive poop. It's very good.
Look, honey, we gotta talk. I know you want to help, but this is getting out of control. You can't treat a grown man like a baby. It ain't right. I feel like I've been trying to be someone else lately, eating food I don't eat, and I'm just not gonna do it anymore. And if I don't ever poop again, well, that's just gonna be who I am. I'd rather die with a burger in my colon than live and eat faux foo.
Hank, I know, and it's okay, you're right.
What?
Well, I'm only doing this because I want you to be around as long as possible because I love you. But I have to let you be you.
Oh, thank you. I'll still be here for a good long while.
I worry.
I know you do.
That you could.
I know, honey. And I'm a lucky son of a gun, I tell you what. To have a woman like you care so much about me, I'm going to be more open. Tell you how I'm doing more and let you in.
Yeah. I just want this moment to last forever, Hike.
Me too. But it can't.
Oh, hold me, Hank.
No. Let go.
I love how it changes so quickly, but it's actually very touching to see Hank be vulnerable and admit that he's afraid and things like that. Like and then it immediately goes to like his problem is solved because he's able to relax.
Yes, he finally relaxes. Well, he cries for the first time in the show. We've seen him cry.
He lets something out figuratively, so he can let something out like physically, literally.
So my armchair diagnosis is that it was. Psychologically, he let something go and he finally relaxed. And by being able to cry, it loosened up other parts of his body.
Yeah.
But also, For the past few days, he was finally eating like greens and more fiber. So I think it finally took effect and got things moving as well. So I think it's a bit of both there that made it finally work out. And I really, Caffeine and Jimmy's way of saying like, I'll worry.
Yeah.
You could like, that really got me like in the way she's like saying it while she buries her head in his chest and is kind of shaking like.
But she does a great job. They're selling this fun medical thing realistically. This funny idea of a man being constipated.
There's no comedy to that moment. It is just that she cares so much. Yeah. Like, and
she's never said like you're going to die or like I'm worried about you dying. She's just like, well, this could be serious. She never underlines like mortality until now.
Yeah, and also that the way he, I think another thing that finally unlocked it for him was. That until this moment in the show, Hank never admitted that he couldn't poop. Other people would talk about it for him, and he'd be like, fine, whatever.
Let's stop talking about this.
Yeah, let's stop talking about it. He would never say, I can't poop. But when he says here, if I never poop again, then that's just who I am. That's him admitting he has a problem. And by doing that, he's finally freed up. Like, that's... We talked about that in the as a continuing theme throughout the King of the Hill series, when we did the pilot, that it is that they show that Hank is one extreme, all these extremes that Hank has to navigate, but that he has to admit like, you know what? I can't just, there's something to this touchy feely emotional stuff. And I need to meet people halfway on that. I can't just pretend that I'm fine all the time.
Emotions help you make.
It's true. Yeah. And, you talk about Beavis and Butthead stuff, but also the mixing of classical music to a bathroom moment also feels very Beavis and Butthead, too.
Emerging to the strings of Ode to Joy
after
you poop. They don't go as broad after this first season with these musical cues. Like in the first episode, there's like a record scratch and things like that. Yeah. I'm surprised there wasn't one here. I thought there was.
Yeah, when his eyes pop open, they could have had a record scratch, but did not. I think this is the second best use of animation and Ode to Joy, the best since Evangelion.
That's true,
Actually, I think the Evangelion one.
There's
probably
no animation.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it's actually more well animated than Ava. I was just going to say that Evangelion scene, I think, probably aired within 6 months of this episode.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're probably right.
In Japan.
In Japan,
We got the VHS like a year later. But
before we go, though, Hank has some things to say about nudity on television.
You might have noticed in tonight's episode there was some brief nudity. Now, as an actor, I only do nudity when I feel the script warrants it. And I thought tonight's episode only warranted seeing the side of my rump. You can believe me when I tell you the Fox executives were pushing for a whole lot more. If any of you were offended by my body, I'm truly sorry. Good night.
King of the Hill, I don't know how they were able to do this or if they had more money or something, but there's a lot of post-credit scenes that are not just like a deleted scene they stuck over the credits.
Yeah.
That's money. That's money they could be spending elsewhere.
They did it a ton in season one. I think they ease up on it as the show goes.
But at least up until season three or four, they still do this thing.
Yeah. These ones especially are strange. Like there were ones where Mike Judge played Hank as the actor on the show King of the Hill, who is aware he's on a TV show, and often he did it from his lawnmower. Like I think they reused this animation for a lot. I remember him in this similar posing, congratulating the Simpsons on 200 episodes.
Oh, you're right.
From the same lawnmower.
Yeah, it's funny that the show has a very consistent reality. The characters kept very consistent. Nothing like too wacky happens. But then with these post-credit things, they can be actors on a show.
Yes.
Like I believe he comes out with the Chris Rock character after that episode to talk about like making fun of butts or whatever.
And
in the episode where Hank is trying to figure out what the magician's magic trick, how it's done, Bobby comes out as the masked magician to show you how the trick is done.
It's such a great gag on Fox's Magician Secrets Reveal. I love that one. Like, please don't tell my dad.
All right.
And the Ode to Joy, I do appreciate the camera move, because like every part of it's animated, and it's only for like 3 or 4 seconds.
Yes, he embraces his wife. I hope he washed his hands first. That was a very quick poop for being that backed up.
Yeah, I got to think, I go through it a lot faster than that, I have to say. It's really ambitious, too, because that kind of animation, like, you know, they're not used to yet, and to ask your overseas studio to do that, one frame of that going wrong means you're spending a lot of money on a retake, you know? So I wonder if it came out that well on the first try or if there is some retakery in there.
The shows are looking better as the first season progresses. Like, the first show is very rough, but even Hank is looking better. They're, by season two, all the extra lines will be gone from his face, but he looks a lot better even in, like, mid-season one than he did at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I love that the final shot is just him, Bobby, and Peggy hugging together like a family reunited.
They're celebrating Hank's bowel movements.
And they're also happy, like Luann too, like she's kind of like, it's like she's...
Oh, she's got to go to the bathroom.
Oh, I was thinking it was just her like reacting for the football team, like, oh, go, go.
But okay, yeah.
Yeah, maybe she also needs to use the bathroom.
Yeah, the Bobby is kicked out of brushing his teeth.
It's a great gag that he doesn't run back to his bathroom, that he takes the guest bathroom. He's like, no, get out of here right now. I can't make 7 extra steps to my bathroom.
There is a very consistent layout to this house, though.
Mm-hmm. Even in season one. And yeah, it was funny to hear him comment on his nudity, too, because Mike Judge likes making... He likes drawing butts. He likes drawing the butts on his main characters. And he'll do it He'll do it a number of times again with Hank.
We've said it too many times on these podcasts, but treasure all the 90s butts, because they're plentiful in the 90s, but now they're so rare.
They did draw Luann naked once, too.
Oh, like, you're right.
Which they had some fun with that. But I did really love the gag of that where she, like, gets seen by Bobby, and then she closes the curtain so aggressively.
It opens on the other side.
It opens on the other side, but she thinks it's closed, and she's like, phew, and then Bobby is just still slack jawed, like, what? What? That was a funny gag.
That's like season two or three. We'll get to it. We'll get to it, folks. We want to do more
I'm
of this.
I'm sure. Yes. Yeah.
But another great episode of Talking in the Hill. Thanks again for listening, folks, especially if you're giving to us, and you better be giving to us. Again, if anyone gives this to you on the streets, we want names. Rat them out.
Start snitching on podcast dealers. But thanks so much for listening. This was a really fun episode that made me examine my relationship with my partner as well. And I hope while giving you guys laughs about Dookie, it also did the same for you.
And think about how often you make.
Yes, yeah. I've been counting the days, you know. I watching this, I was thinking, like, do I need to go to the bathroom now? Do I need to eat some fiber stuff? What's my plan?
I'll tell you what, if you drink 18 liters of coffee a day like me, it's no problem at all.
No, I have one cup of coffee and it's 4 trips to the bathroom for me. I love a coffee-free life and I'm proud.
But again, thanks for listening. We're having a lot of fun with this series. Look forward to more. We're only halfway through the season right now. Can you believe it? We got like another 7 episodes to go. But thanks again, folks, for listening. We'll see you next week with West East Side Story and a very special guest.
Why, look at that, Peg. Cotton balls. White ones. Whole jar of them. How many do you think there are in there? I'll bet 30. Yep. 30.